So during our last episode about energy, y'all heard Juan Mancias talk briefly about the pipelines that cut through his sacred land. However, during the time I was given the opportunity to listen to him tell his story, he not only talked about pipelines, this man educated the heck out of me on so many different topics, such as land rights, indigenous rights, and the rocky U.S. relationship with the original people of the land. Juan is a tribal chairman, a historian, a storyteller, and a keeper of the lifeways for his tribe. We want to ensure that y'all hear his story too, so we decided to create this special feature episode. So yeah, let's get started. Climate justice, y'all. It's real, it's here, and it's about time we uplift stories like Juan's. Thank y'all, let's get started.
Well, I'm okay, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's been like blood and real here, like bad here. I don't know if that's the case in Texas.
Well, we had some real hard rains out here, and we did get flooding. Actually, the San Antonio River is still not doing too good. It was still high, so I'm sitting in the truck, as a matter of fact, because I've been. This is my office. We actually need a lot of help, and it's like, you know, trying to find administrative staff, and I'm it right now.
Wait, you're the only one?
Right now, it's the only one because my daughter works and she has a couple of days off, and it's always, you know, trying to take care of her family as well. And for me, it's just, we got a village right now that we have two people at the village, and there's more coming, what y'all call camps, you know. We call them villages because they're permanent for us. But I just want to get to the point where we can become pretty solvent, and we're working on our federal recognition, trying to develop, you know, the good kind of governance that we've had over the last 175 years. And it's really hard to explain to people who want a democratic process. When we've always worked out of a consensus and learning to live with it, you know, because that's what we've been trained to do over the years, is that programming of live with it, you know. So it's just a question of maintaining our comfortableness in a state where right now all our grave sites, and I don't think people know just how badly it is, but if this country was invaded in any way and they came in and started tearing down everything that people considered freedom, like the Washington Monument, you know, started tearing all those things down, I think people would understand what is happening to us. But there's really no connection a lot of times. And that's why we're just trying to maintain ourselves. And I mean, we're not a rich tribe. We don't have, you know, gas and oil royalties like some of the tribes here in Texas. And we don't have the federal contracts or the federal grants like some of the tribes here in Texas. And that really hurts. And now with all the notoriety that we're getting, everybody wants to be Carrizo, you know. And it's kind of annoying sometimes because you have to let people, or they're picking other tribes, you know. So it's becoming annoying, and it's just to the point where I think I need to be able to continue doing the job that I've been doing for the last several years. And I'm talking about from the time that I was asked to be the tribal chair, which has been since the 80s when my grandfather passed away.
No, I was just going to explain the awe I have about how you said earlier that you're like working by yourself. And
well, that's what it's amounting to right now. So it's really been difficult in the past we had people, but I think a lot of people are just in it, you know, to see what they can get out of it. And I don't have any anchors or hooks, you know. I am who I am, so I can't run away from my responsibilities or the destiny that I have. Let me put it that way. And I know a lot of people don't believe in that. So, well, you need to go out and take care of yourself. Well, I figure if I take care of the tribe, I'm taking care of myself. And and I think that's a different way of looking at it from that, from the more socialized concept of how people see themselves, you know. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for our listeners, could you actually like introduce yourself formally, because you're talking about, you know, your tribe, you're talking about the village that is being set up right now, slash has already been set up. So tell us more about you.
Well, my name is Juan Mancias, and I have the title under the our 501c3 as the tribal chair. I'm also kind of been leading as the head spokesperson for the tribe for the last 45 years, and I've been walking a road that continues to maintain some kind of a connection to our sacred sites. And when we talk about building a village, we're talking about, you know, reconnecting to the old villages of our ancestors, and we're starting to recognize those villages along all through Texas. Now they weren't permanent, but they were connected to who we are, and they identify our culture, they identify our connection to the land, which means that for us, you know, we don't understand what true ownership of the land is, because we used to migrate a lot, and now we weren't nomads. We were actually in the lands of our ancestors, and we walked up and down through a lot of the places, and we were one of the largest tribes in Texas, and have been. You know, when you look at it from the morphology of the tribe, the makeup of the tribe, we had the language stock, the people that spoke the language, that made it into a tribe. And I hate to use the word tribe a lot. I use tribal nation more or less, because tribe comes from the word of apes, and that's what they called us when they first came here. Then we were just apes, and so that's why they called us a tribe.
Wait, good Lord, I didn't even know that was a... Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yes, it is. I'm
good
serious.
Grief. Oh, my
and,
God.
And that insults. Has a lot... I know. That has a lot to do with the doctrine of discovery, that Papal Bull of 1493, where they had the right and the king's right to do what they wanted, you know, and to do it whenever they wanted and do it however they wanted. And that's because that's what's happening right now. And I think that, you know, that's the hook that everybody has when you become programmed and brainwashed. You know, you have a hook to always get out. But for us, you know, we're always going to be the original people of the land. This is Indian land. And so we have to be aware of the verbiage that's being used and how it denotes, you know, how they treated us. Even the word sovereignty to me is, they say we are a sovereign nation because we're not recognized, and we still have a governance process that we have, but it's based on a consensus and not so much on a dictate or a democratic process of voting. So we have to kind of re-educate everybody about who we are. But the word sovereignty actually comes from that doctrine of discovery mentality, where you know, that we were just property of whoever owned the land here, and that's still happening today. I don't think that a lot of people understand that when you own property, you own everything on that property, including the graves that are on that property, and people won't let us come in to take care of our own people. In other words, I was told the other day that if I had ever heard of the right of conquest, and I'm going like, oh my God, somebody really said that.
Good Lord.
And when you look up right of conquest, it's about the murdering and the invasion and the terroristic acts that are done to a people to say that they never existed. But for 500 years, that's been happening here to the Native Nations. And I think a lot of the bills that have been passed, the laws that have been passed to try and help to help us, are all only to regulate us. And from the Dawes Act, where they did the Allotment Act, where, you know, the blood quantum issue, whether the less blood quantum you had of being native, the, you know, you had no rights to the land anymore. And even though you might have been raised native and your teachings were native, and even just because your blood didn't, your blood quantum wasn't there anymore, they took away your rights to be part of the tribe or to identify as a tribal nation, as a tribal member of a tribal nation. And but I have to say that about the tribe thing, because I think people need to understand how it affects me, because there's no words of really of describing who we are other than through the word Atakinas. And Atakinas means that you're born from the land. Born from the sand here. And even indigenous is a catch-all term, and it throws everybody into one basket and says, okay, well, you're indigenous. But if you don't know your tribal identity or your nation identity, you're actually don't understand the teachings of those people. And it's based on those teachings that we live by. And it's not a question of color, but a question of being connected to the earth and connected to what's going on here. And that's why I'm saying we don't have a true idea of ownership. We have an idea of being connected to the land, and that the land is us. And that's why, you know, and that's why it's really hard for us to say, I have a hook. I've heard it all. I've heard them tell me, go back where you came from. And I've had to say, well, where do you live? Well, they'll say, where do you live? And I say, well, what do you want to know for? And I say, well, because I need to go pitch a tent behind your, in your backyard or your front yard, because that's, you know, that's where I come from.
Oh, yes.
And they kind of look at me like, what? And I said, right, yeah. But this whole idea of ownership is what's really bad, because the Spanish land grant mentality still exists even within the American thought. And here in Texas, it's awful about it, because that's why they do the eminent domain even to private property owners, because they're the ones that are sovereign. They're the ones that are going to protect their kingdoms and their castles. You know, this is that's totally mentality of a hierarchical attitude of king and queen that came out of the papal bull of 1493, which is the doctrine of discovery. And I think people need to look at that. Even our own people need to look at it and recognize that the bill, like the Howard Wheeler Act of 1934. What was a colonizing bill that colonized and took away the power out of the traditional councils and the traditional leaders and gave it to elected leaders. And that's how it was. That's how the government could better work with the so-called tribes that are recognized now. It's only here where you get paid to be Indian, because actually once you get recognized, you get federal contracts, and you have to have, you know, federal grants, and they pay you so much a year to run your administration. Right now, that's what I'm telling you, it's really hard, because we don't have that ability, so we have to be truly sovereign and go out and do Facebook, asking for Facebook donations and GoFundMes and looking for grants that'll help us to try and set up what we're doing already. So we're just protecting our lands.
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, thank you so much for taking your time to educate us. I really, really deeply appreciate it. And thank you for not only the work you do, but I mean, you're bringing up a lot of different intersecting issues that almost, how do I say this? It's almost like these issues that have been happening for 500 plus years, ever since, you know, colonizers invaded this land. These are just reoccurring problems that are still happening today. And you mentioned earlier about your sacred sites and this concept of, quote, you know, land ownership or whatever that really means, since no one can truly own the land. But your work has to do, like, from what I read on the internet, as valuable as a source as that is, it seems like y'all are stopping pipelines that are going through these sacred sites. Can you talk more about that?
Well, the thing is that with some of the help that our associate Lori Simmons has done on some of the pipelines, which, you know, has been is one of the facts that is being left out in a lot of the discussion, is that in 2016 there were 229 pipelines that were put in there. 129 of those pipelines were LNG pipelines, and 87 of them were crude oil. I don't know if that adds up correctly, but you know, but that's the exactly number that were put in. We haven't updated that statistic yet, because the Texas Railroad Commission keeps moving all the permits that is allowed in all the pipelines that are actually working right now, because we are investigating constantly in what's going on, but they are going through our sites, and it's been real difficult. And I'll tell you why, because here in the state of Texas, they have a thing called intrastate pipelines. The intrastate pipelines are not subject to NAGPRA, subject to the Antiquities Act, or subject to any kind of due diligence that's going to make the company pay more to do the research. So where they're going through, we recognize as those areas as being sacred, especially when they're milling the very rock that they're going through to set these pipelines. Like the Whistler pipeline was one of those things, and we got pictures of that, and I wish I could share them with you, but I mean if you need to I'll be more than glad to share those pictures, what they were doing. We were there, and we have a couple of videos where you can see the noise, and you can hear and you can see the sand, and you're actually breathing that sand in that goes into the air. And then they put the pipelines in, and they're running them all the way down to South Texas, to a place called Agua Dulce, where there's a pump station there they're trying to direct everything toward either Corpus Christi, or trying to do the things with building the LNGs, the liquefied natural gas export terminals in Brownsville. We were able to with a lot of our constant work with some of the people from the area, like Becca Hinojosa, who works for Sierra Club, and myself. We have constantly been badgering investors not to invest into these things. So Enova LNG was not given a permit. So one of them is already shut down. There were three of them, and the one we were more afraid of was Enova, because Enova was asking for tax abatements. And but the Rio Grande LNG right now is looking for more investors to try and see if they can get open. And of course, the Texas LNG is the one that's on top of one of our sacred sites. And it's a National Historic Registered site called Garcia Pasture. And right now we're really working on trying to shut them down as well, but we've delayed their construction for almost 5 years now. Actually, since 2014. And basically because we're involved in it. Now we're saying that even where Rio Grande LNG is setting up, and their Rio Bravo pipeline is actually violating, you know, the NAGPRA and violating the Antiquities Act and our American Indian Religious Freedom Act to be able to visit there and to pray there, because our umbilical cords is one of our ceremonies that are buried into the ground, which connects us to the earth. And that's how you never lose connection to the things around you. And you understand that you're only part of the creation, not above it or below it, and we're not here to have dominion over the earth. And when you have that kind of a thought, this is what happens. And then we're fighting to try to control the pollution. One of the things I say is, you know, we can stop the pollution, but we have to start redoing what's already polluted.
Oh, wow. And, yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things that we have to be aware of. We're not in control, even as environmentalists. And we, I think a lot of us think that we can control the situation. All we can do is stop the pollution, the ongoing pollution, because what's polluted is polluted. How are we going to get every piece of plastic that's been put into the ocean that is killing the turtles, that the birds are picking up for nesting and are getting caught in them and then dying? I mean, these kind of things are the things that we have to be totally aware of. And then, of course, we got to stop the crimes against humanity that's happening down in South Texas, and start looking at ourselves as human beings again. But because the ongoing threat of genocide is there, it hasn't stopped for 500 years. 500 years ago, you know, when the first European landed here, especially in Texas, along the Boca Chica, which is the mouth of the Rio Grande, and they forded the river up toward around Del Rio and came back, they noticed that there were villages, you know, on either side every 8 to 10 miles. And now this is recorded, and the thing is that they landed at each one of these villages and started pillaging and raping and killing. And this is the Spanish Europeans that came in. And then they on the way back, we heard about what was going on, so we started killing them. And then when they got out and they left, it took them another 60 years to come back. But they only started building missions on the south side of the Rio Grande. And the missions that were built over here came later, and they were without, they weren't without any retaliation, because we didn't want them here. We already knew what they were doing to us. And so there's a lot of history that people don't know about what has happened in Texas, like what happened at the missions. There's a painting in Post, Texas at Lake Ellen Henry, which is now underwater because they dammed the river to get water to Lubbock, Texas. The picture actually shows the missionaries and the Spanish leading native people into the mission, and the missionary cutting off the hands and the feet of our people to convert them or to get rid of them so they could start doing what they needed to do. So there was there's an absolution of killing our people with this New World mentality. And what they did 500 years coming in here by taking the resources was first to get rid of the natives, and that's how the environment was taken under control. And because we live by the code that we were just we were a small piece of the creation, not all of it.
Yeah.
And the thing is that when we start looking at that 500 years later, they're still exporting the resources of this land to Europe and to other places of the old world. And I say that very loosely, the new world.
Yeah.
And because there is no new world, there's only one world here, you know. Mm-hmm. There's not a white world and a red world. There's only one world, and that's the Earth. And what they've done is they segmented it to the point where we have no clue to what's really happening. So if you want to survive, you know, your race is more important. And that's what's important, that we recognize how we have done that to even accentuate the fact of capitalism and racism is the same thing. Because there is a caste system, and it's based on a plantation mentality. We were actually the first mm-hmm. plantations in this country. They called them encomiendas.
Wait, can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, when they came here, the encomiendas were the things that made us totally unaware of. That goes back to the doctrine of discovery and what they said about how we were we weren't human beings if we didn't believe in their God. And
Jeez.
And so I mean, you gotta read the Doctrine of Discovery and the stipulations that they put in to our people, because even our word sovereignty, like I said, is based on that ideal. So you know, we have to recognize what really happened there, and that's why I have to you know, look at all of the problems that we're having with the idea of the plantation system, because encomiendas gave the landowners, the Spanish landowners, the right to own all things that were on their property, because that was the king's right. And that's what sovereignty is based on, even with our people, because either you want to be a chief or you can't be just a common man who speaks for the people. You know, you have to be given a title of royalty, you know, and I always refuse to take that title, because I mean, for me, I'm just a spokesperson, and I'll do it just for our 501c, because it's important to do that. But we need to let people know that they're caught up in this colonial mentality of a democratic so-called process, when we're not really working with consensus. And when you work with consensus, that means you have to be involved with those people individually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it,
you know, go ahead.
Yeah. And you're an amazing spokesperson at that. You know, I think you're being a little too humble with all the work that you do. I'll record, if it's okay with you, Juan, later. I would love to record and read some of the things that, like some of the work that you've been doing, to make sure our listeners know, if that's okay with you. But if not, I totally get it.
No, no problem. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I mean, I am an educated person. You know, I did go to college, and I just don't throw that around like everybody else does, because it's not a stigma of authority. And it's also only a segmented part of what I know, you know? So.
Oh, I can only imagine. I've already learned so much from you in just the short conversation we've had. And, you know, like, I could keep asking like 1,000 questions and this podcast could keep going forever.
I know.
But I was wondering about, since this episode is about energy, I mean, we've covered a lot. Well, I say we. You've covered a lot of different segments, I guess, like of different intersecting issues that are coming, that the original people of the land have to deal with. And I'm still kind of stuck about how you said that some original people of the land do have like ownership of certain like oil and energy and stuff. And does mm-hmm. that like make things complicated because how it goes through like sacred sites? That sounds super ignorant for me to ask, but like, I'm curious to know that like relationship, if that's okay. And if you're like, Abigail, that is a stupid question.
Yeah. Actually, Abigail, it's connected to everything. I mean, we don't disconnect ourselves from everything that's going on, because what's happening at the border wall is the same thing as the petrochemical situation that's happening. Because why are they setting up a wall that's a mile away from the river? Because they want to have total martial law on one side of the river, where they can come in and start building pipelines without having to, you know, any permits. And that's the federal government, you know, and you have to take that into consideration, because we've seen that happen and it's going to continue to happen. And I think that that's one of the things that is important here. And I think that because we recognize, we do have stories about how the oil and all of this came to be when the creator was trying to take care of the earth because of what was happening. The creator doesn't come around very often. You know, the creator comes around when the creator needs to be here, and things are looking really, really bad. And the rest of it is creator treats us like human beings. But when you start taking death out of the ground, you know, because
oh, man.
That's, that's exactly what it is, you know, what oil is, and that's what coal is, and that's what gas is, then you have to understand that there has to be some intervention. And if we're not adults enough and we're going to continue being children digging up the earth to get these things for money, that's the resources that they did 500 years ago when they came just for the gold.
Wow.
You know? And that's
pulling
exactly
death
why
from the ground.
That's what it is.
Sorry. I mean, that's everything. Oh, gosh.
And you're bringing death back up in where it should be resting, you know, and it should be left there. And that's not what they're doing. They're really just kind of killing everything off. And I just need to allow a place for us to be more aware and more connected to the reason this happened. Creator came one time. Creator came. Creator decided that the ugliness of our people that was happening, the hatred and the fighting, the infighting that we were doing, had to be taken care of. And Creator called all the birds and called all the animals. You know, at one time, all the birds, they all looked the same. They were silvery color. The crows and the ravens, they all had the same color. And Creator started asking the ravens and the caracaras, and asked them, go and bring me wood, dry wood, so that I can put all these bad feelings into the earth, and put all this ugliness into the earth, and let it die, and so that the earth can heal it. And the earth has had this power to heal us for a long time. And Creator said, you know, here, put it all in there. And then he lit it on fire. But as the birds were coming out, some of them got a little burnt, like the caracara now has a white head and a little bit of white on his tail. The crows were the last ones, the ravens were the last ones to come out. And that's my clan, because they really wanted to move. They really wanted to make sure that all of that the Creator put in there, all that hatred would stay there, you know. And as they came out no longer in the silver color. They came out as the black ravens that we know today. And that's my clan, and I'm proud to be of that clan, because of the insistence that they wanted to see that to stop. And that's why this is important to us, because all of that death is really the bad feeling that they brought out. And that's why we have the new hatred out there. That's how we explain it. But I mean, it all has an epistemology. It all has a beginning. And I think that if our stories are not important enough and our prophecies are not important enough, like the prophecies that are at Seminole Canyon, they want to be interpreted by non-Indians. And those people that don't know the teachings or don't know the language, which our language can interpret it, then we have to be able to say, look, this prophecy here talks about the fracking, and it shows you horizontal fracking. It shows you the flares, the fracking flares. And they tell you how we're fighting it, and it shows you how they're digging it out of the ground to be able to fortify those, they're there. I can show you the pictures. They've been there for 4,000 years, and it's been verified that those are prophecies of our people. But to have people that don't know their teachings anymore and start saying, well, you know, that's okay. That's what I want to understand. Well, that's because you don't understand. You weren't raised in this way, and you're not listening very well. You just want to live on the spirituality of being some kind of a chief or some kind of a shaman, you know. And I'm going like that, you know, that's not what it's about. It's about an understanding what they were telling us that was going to happen, and how do we deal with it? Even the snake, the black snake.
Mm-hmm. I've heard about
it's
that.
On there, it's on there too. It's on there. It's on that painting.
Great.
And it shows the Rio Grande, where that snake never crosses the Rio Grande.
Juan, I have chills. My stomach dropped. I have good grief.
But nobody wants to hear it. You know, everybody wants to put out this positive note. And when you see the things that are happening, like the people that are dying of cancer, like at St. James Parish in Louisiana, yeah. And what's mm-hmm. and what's happening in other places, we have to be aware that there is a big ass problem in what's mm-hmm. going on here, because nobody's really connected to one another anymore. They segmented us so badly to the point where it's not just a border issue anymore. It's become an international issue where, you know, this country thinks it's better than anybody else out there. So when the president says, God bless America, I'm always wondering, what about the rest of the world?
Hmm. You're making me want to, like, go into battle, Juan. Like, I'm ready to, like, you're, oh my God. Yes.
Well, see, and that's the issue. And I think a lot of people don't want to deal with that or recognize that the real significant part of it. And of course, you know, I'm not perfect. That's why I keep saying I'm just a common man, a common human being, you know. And that's one of the things that I learned in my teachings, as I walked with a lot of the elders that I knew, and I have to be aware that, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and proclaim that I'm, you know, anything else other than I'm just a common man. I don't have that Messiah complex. All I want is for my people to live. And that's all it is. I think we need to look at it from that perspective, that we do have the stories that match, you know, what is happening today. And that there are the prophecies, there that match what is happening today. Like there was an old gentleman of that I knew of, Native man, who said that the rivers would be on fire, they were turned on fire. And guess what? Now you can throw a match in some of these rivers and they'll light up on you.
That makes me want to vomit.
Oh. See, these things, nobody wants to listen to our prophecies because we don't know their God. And, and I say their God with a little G. And because I don't understand what they mean by, we don't know your God. Our God was not a selfish God who came only for murder and to take whatever the riches of the land were. And they continue that 500 years. So to say that the American Holocaust has stopped, it hasn't stopped. Anytime that any tribe has to request, you know, has to request to be recognized by this country to be an actual tribal nation, is part of that whole thing of saying, well, I'm sorry, sir, can I have some more oatmeal? You know, like Oliver Twist.
Oh God, yeah. No, I mean, it's insulting. It's absolutely insulting.
And then they're the ones that decide, you know, and we're having to sit here. We still are who we are, and there's no way anybody can tell us different.
I mean, exactly, and there's so much power in that too. Is like, no matter how many times like colonizers have tried to like completely and totally commit all genocide against all the original people of the land, like y'all are still here and y'all are still fighting. And I mean, like, okay, Juan, I grew up in a really small town called Alabama. And actually, we're gonna cut out Alabama because I don't need people to know where I came from. I came from a very small town. I came from a very small town in Alabama. And I distinctly remember being taught in school that, quote, Native Americans gave us their land. Like, we were taught that, like, we had a peaceful relationship until, you know, Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears. I mean, it was absolutely propaganda. And I didn't know any of this until I came to college and was like, wait, you know, like at the time I was like, that doesn't sound right at all. That's sketchy. That's super sketchy. And then I came to college and I met people, like original people of the land from all over the country. And it continues to blow my mind and infuriate me how y'all have been treated for 500 years. I mean, I mean, what can we do to fix this? Like, how can, you know, white people repair this relationship? How can we fix this? And, you know, I'm asking, like, generally, I'm not asking you to answer because, you know, that's silly.
You know, I even tell my own relatives, my relatives that are, you know, from the same identity, you know, that we have the same blood runs through our veins. I tell them, I said, you know, immersion is the best way to understand. And immersion with, you know, it's been 500 years of anguish and torture, and bloodshed, and murdering and raping of our people, and of the land as well. And the only way people are going to understand is to break away from their ideals that they're the Messiah, that they have the answer to everything. The solution is immersion, and the solution is to learn to live with our diversities. And our language got recorded in 1886, and I still get a lot of my own tribal members wanting me to sit there and write and sit in a classroom to teach the language. And I'm going, there's bigger things going on. You know, they've been going on for 40 years, and a lot of you just are worried about learning the language. And I said, you know, you can learn it from the book. It doesn't mean that you'll ever understand what that language is until you immerse yourself in the culture, you immerse yourself in the land, so you can understand what they were talking about. And because that's the only way to regain the consciousness of our own relatives. So I know that a lot of people say we're trying to save the future generations, and the best way to do that is by immersing yourself into that culture. Because there's only one language here. I mean, I was told the other day, well, I think it's kind of rude that you speak Spanish to other people. And I'm going, like, well, whoa, wait a minute. I said, I know Spanish. I know my language. I know, actually, I can understand two or three other native languages. And I understand a little bit of French. And I said, I've taken the time to be able to get to that place. And you think I'm rude? By telling me, you know, and I find those kind of things very, very degrading to me, because I feel like I can't say anything, especially if you know the people, you know, and it's hard, because I have to be able to, I mean, like, I don't, like, I haven't gone through enough punishment, you know, and I'm not trying to say I'm a victim, because I don't want to be a victim.
No,
but because I'm tired of being a victim, I don't say a lot about that to everybody, because I that's a whole can of worms that you have to start with people that are really just there just for their own gain and for their own for because they don't connect to anything else, and they're still isolated in their own I am an island mentality.
And it's an ego thing too.
Yeah, so it's all about me, and I'm saying, okay, well, I'll eat my ego and forget all of that and just keep walking here. So, yeah, that's the way I see a lot of these things, and but nobody wants to talk to me about those things. They want to talk about, you know, how they get how their my speaking out is controversial to them and makes them uneasy, and I Good keep Lord. Hearing that. And I keep hearing that over and over, because they have that hook. They have that hook in line to be able to pull themselves out anytime they want to. At least that's what they think. I don't have that opportunity. I am always going to be who I am. And I'm always going to be called rude, controversial, and, you know, and even thrown into an eco-terrorist list where, you know, you know what I'm saying? I can't fly without them checking all my bags. Like I'm the criminal, and I don't even have a criminal record, but I'm,
yeah, you're the one that's helping save us.
Well, I'm not even trying to do that. I'm just trying to tell you stories. I'm not trying to save anything, because I think I think what I'm saying is, you just need to stop polluting, stop damaging each other, and let's go forward and try to get the pollution that's already out there to die, you know, and that's part of the hatred and the racism. I'm not a savior. Don't say that, because I'm not. I'm just a common man that has a lot of faults and, you know, has feelings, and those feelings get walked on, and I have a lot of thoughts that I want to put on paper, but I think that people need to listen to them like you are now, and listen to the story, the real stories, and not romanticize who we are as Native people. I mean, I don't even have a feather hat because I refuse to.
Yeah.
I refuse to walk around being, you know, that much feathered. You know, it's not about the feathers. It's about the rathers. And I say that too.
Mm-hmm.
Because rather than have the feathers, I'd rather point out that we do need to work on these petrochemical issues. We need to talk about plastics beyond plastics, and all the little plastic little, you know, particles that are in the water that we're still drinking, and these things are all because of petrochemical inputs, and we've allowed it, and we thought it was a good science. But I mean, they believe in that science, but they won't believe in the science of climate change and what's happening to us right now. We went through one of the worst snowstorms here back in March and late February because of climate change. I had never seen that much snow here in this area, and it snowed like crazy. And my lines were broken. My lines were the last ones to be fixed. I made sure all of my relatives who have the same blood as I were taken care of first, that our elder was taken care of, you know, and then finally my pipe got fixed. And we put a lot into it just so that people could be okay. And, you know, because I do believe in mutual aid. I do believe in help working together. And but it was hard. It was difficult. Because the whole Texas grid went down.
Mm.
And we're talking again about petrochemical things. I think alternative fuels are important. We need solar panels like crazy here on this village, at the village side here. It's called Somisek Village. And we used to have Yaoli Village. That was the village that we held for a year and a half. And it was a freedman cemetery. And we had people come in and out of there, and it was good. And of course, eventually, because of the two hurricanes that we had last year, we had to abandon the village. And we still don't have the proper vehicles and to go in there and get the rest of our stuff out. It's just sitting there in a junk pile now, because our mess tent was messed up with the winds of the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to find ways to alleviate that, to get everything out of there. But when we were first there, there was nobody taking care of that cemetery. And it's a Texas historical cemetery. And it's a freedman cemetery that used to run, you know, be part of the Underground Railroad for slavery there in the 1500s. I'm sorry, not 1500s. During the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Good grief. Well, speaking of aid and helping each other out, and, you know, I do want to, like, I mean, we can talk as long as you want, Juan, but for the sake of time, I was wondering if we could close off by asking what listeners can do to help y'all. Like, how can we support you and your 501c3 and your efforts? I mean, what can we do?
Well, I mean, we do have a GoFundMe on that you can go on to, and we have a PayPal that you can go to, and it's carrizocomecudo@gmail.com, and of course we have a Cash App too that you can go on to. I can't remember what that. I think it's C, it's a capital C, capital C, I don't know if it's NT or capital. Oh yeah, it's capital C, capital C, capital T, small, and then a small X. 1982.
Well, we'll double check we'll include the links to our podcast.
Yeah, I'll get it. Yeah, I'll get them to you. I can include them. And of course, you know, anytime on Facebook, you can go on there, and I'm always putting something to help us get some money, because that's usually how we work, is just through the donations that mm-hmm. kind people give to us, and because the rest of it is kind of hard because we don't have I have reporting to do and that gets difficult too, and people that want to allocate funding, you know, it's crazy, and I'm not being, you know, saying that I don't want to be reporting everything, and we need to report. This is part of it right here, reporting to you what's going on. And that's what we do most of the time, is why we're on the road. We go out there and take pictures and videos. I do a lot of the live feeds on the petrochemical issues that we're having, and also the wall, you know, and the inhumane treatment of individuals that are just coming here for an education, or mm-hmm. you know, just for a better job, and how they get treated because of you know, then they're not seen as, it goes back to that whole thing of the doctrine of discovery, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not Americans, you know. They're not from America.
Yeah.
And they're the first ones that, some of those guys, you know, are the ones that say, well, go back where you came from. And I'm going like, well,
here.
Yeah, excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but the thing is that for me, BLME has become more important because I've seen a lot of people from the Congo and Cameroon also mm-hmm. coming across. So it's not a question of other than trying to help these people and also to document the treatment of what's happening, and that it hasn't stopped, that a lot of these people that are working for CBP, that's Customs Border Patrol, and the ICE agents are, you know, they shot a woman in the back of the head more than 3 years ago, and we don't even know what the final conviction was on it.
Jesus. Good grief.
So, it's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Oh God, I laugh because, you know, sometimes if you don't laugh, you cry. And good grief. Well, Juan, we're gonna make sure your story gets out. We're going to make sure that you get support for the awesome work you're doing. And I am definitely gonna try to look at those pictures and documents that you have on Facebook and learn more about the prophecies that, because I want to learn more. And thank you so much for your time.
And just remember, we're trying to hang on to our 30 acres here too. So make sure you mention something about our 30 acres and trying to hang on to it.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Well, it's recording. I'll make sure it gets out too.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Juan. Have a fantastic day. And if I could, I would give you a fist bump or a hug. I'm a hugger, so I'll do it through the screen. All right. See you later, Juan.
Later.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Climate Justice Y'all podcast. My name is Michael Hansen, and I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit organization called GASP in Birmingham, Alabama. We're one of the four organizations who came together to produce this podcast. The other groups are the Southeast Climate and Energy Network, the Gulf Coast Center for Law and Policy, and the People's Justice Council. We're centering the stories of the people and places on the front lines of the climate crisis and environmental justice movements in the South. We'll be talking about air, energy, land, labor, democracy, and all kinds of other issues affecting Southern communities. Funding for this podcast was provided in part by the U.S. Climate Action Network. If you'd like to see this work continue, please consider making a donation on our website. If your organization or company would like to sponsor an episode, please get in touch with us by emailing me at michael at michael@gaspgroup.org. That's Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at G-A-S-P-G-R-O-U-P.org. Thanks again for listening and being a part of this story.